I knew that Robbie was coming really fast, aggressive to me, trying to. Yeah. So I would always prepare a 1-2, you know? Yeah. Like, I already know what's behind me. So with one touch, I would play the ball and accelerate behind him to play the 1-2. And that's how I used to dribble. And for me, not being quick helped me as well to develop my mind a little bit quicker and to, you know, try to always compensate in that way. But yeah, it wasn't easy for sure.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Talent Takes Practice, a podcast looking at what it takes to make it to the top of your chosen field and how we can use this experience to help youngsters maximise their own talents, whatever those talents may be. Exciting day today because we've got someone who moved from Spain to England to achieve his goal of becoming a top-class footballer. He went on to win a World Cup, two European Championships, two Premier Leagues, a La Liga title, two FA Cups, Copa del Rey, a Club World Cup. He's probably even better than Robbie Savage. If you can guess it from that, I'll be impressed. But Roberto, Cesc Fabregas, I mean, one of the best Premier League players of all time, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and he's second in the assist charts in the Premier League of all time. We've seen Kevin De Bruyne recently, you know, get 100 assists for Man City in all competitions. Cesc is second in the all-time Premier League list of assists. I played against him on many occasions, tried to kick him off the park. I don't think he liked me much, you know, but now we've become friends and through media. And I remember the time, Matthew, we were 3-2 down, 90 minutes on the clock at the Emirates. Arsenal won the game 6-2, and for the fifth or sixth goal, I went to the corner flag and I tried to smash Cesc, and he's turned, looked at me, put it through my legs, run round, and they've scored from it. And I even had a giggle to myself, and it was caught on the camera, me laughing when we went 5 or 6-2 down because I couldn't believe what he'd just done. He'd embarrassed me, and I think he tweets it now and again, actually, when I'm... Yeah, so but what a legend, what a player.
Actually, before we get into Cesc, and he is an amazing, amazing footballer, how have you been doing? Because we've chatted a couple of times offline away from the podcast, which I know we're both enjoying hugely, and thank you so much for the feedback. We love that, we read it, do continue to post ratings and reviews. But you're talking about Macclesfield Town, fascinating new part of your life. Just say, how is that going?
Yeah, Matthew, I can tell you've been keeping up with my business interests. It's not Macclesfield Town anymore, it's Macclesfield FC. Obviously, you've been taking a keen interest,
sorry,
Matthew.
Sorry, got the terminology wrong.
Don't worry. Yeah, so Macclesfield FC, the construction is happening as we speak. The 4G pitch is going down. You know, all the car park, the facilities, the bars, the gym. It's non-stop, but it's something I'm really enjoying, seeing the business side of football and basically building a football club up from nothing. This is without even contemplating yet of starting the first team. We've got an academy, an international programme. It's hard work, but the thing that worries me is that when are we going to come out of lockdown for the youngsters, for the grassroots sports? That is a huge worry. Yeah. You know, maybe it's in February, it might be March, it might be April, who knows? But I just think for the physical and mental well-being of these youngsters, it's imperative that once again, when we come out of the lockdown, the tiering system, grassroots sports is allowed. One of the first things is education, schools and sport for kids.
So it's fascinating. We're recording this for listeners towards the end of January. Robbie, your campaigning on this has been so important. My boy Ted does a weekly football outing at a coaching course called Excel. He's missed it terribly during lockdown. And that point that you made, that it's such an important part of how you develop your sort of social and moral faculties, the way you get exercise, I think that's been really, really important. Do you think the fact that you've been able to go to Macclesfield FC and you're actually there right now, and do you think the fact you're getting out and about and you've got something to go to and you're meeting people is helping you through lockdown? Because I've got to tell you, the thing that I've really struggled with is just stuck inside the whole time and doing my columns from home, two kids at home. I found it tougher than I believed possible, because I like to think of myself as a strong person, you know, can make it through mind over matter. But actually, you know, it can be quite crippling at times. But do you think you've been helped by that activity to get involved with?
Massively, Matthew. You know, it's the gym in my garage in the mornings, and then in the afternoons, I come over to Macclesfield FC. It's essential work because it's construction going on. So we've got construction people on site. And as you can imagine, rebuilding a football club, every aspect of it, you know, the pitch, the car park, the stadium, the infrastructure inside, you know, the main stand. So myself and Rob Smethers, the owner, have to be here because, as you can imagine, there's something crops up every day. And, you know, you have to be on site to see it. You know, it's okay on a phone, so it's essential work. We have to be here. And it's given me a mental stimulant, really, to think I've got to go there. It's given me something right now in my life which I look forward to going into to work and seeing the progress. Every day there's something new. Every day something comes up. And this is without Matthew. My role as director of football, I've got to create a first team squad with the manager. And because of the level of football we're going to go in at, we can't watch games. There's no games being played. So how can we build a first team for next season? And then on the other side, what level are we going to go in at? Because we don't know. We've applied to the, you know, we've affiliated, we've applied to the FA, but we don't know what level we'll go in yet because of, A, will the tiers 3 to 6 be null and void? We don't know, like last season. So it's all up in the air at the minute, and it's very, very difficult for non-league clubs. You know, we've had on a radio show I do, it's been quite incredible, the motion, the passion, you know, talking about will the seasons be null and void again. But for us, you know, trying to rebuild a football club, it's going to be hard.
And the point you made, Rob, about young people getting out and about, it's not just football that's been curtailed.
No.
You know, golf, tennis, something that I got a lot of value in from at the end of the last lockdown. What's your sort of take right now on whether or not the government fully understands? I mean, just forget the pandemic for a second. Does the government understand the power of sport as an institution to change young lives in the support that it gets from government? Do you think there still needs to be a step change?
I think at first, possibly not, but I think due to... And listen, I'm not saying it was me, Matthew, at all. But I think with my bombarding them with, you know, social media posts now on the WhatsApp group. Yeah. And I just think that I think they are aware of how important it is for, you know, the mental and physical well-being of youngsters. Whatever sport they play, getting out there in the fresh air, camaraderie, friendships being built from a young age, memories. We, who are sportsmen, will never forget, Matthew. You know, the grassroots clubs I play for, I've still got friends now who I play for. Kids are missing out on the opportunity to build friendships. They're missing out on, you know, practice, which, you know, the book Bounce, 10,000 hours, that's huge. You know, you look at under-16s now, not allowed into the elite academies or any academy, 16 down. They're missing development. They're missing pitch time. We understand why, but it's very, very difficult. And I think the government do understand now, and probably when we went to Tier 4, they still allowed grassroots under-18s, which was, for me, the sign that, and that gives us hope that if when we do come out of the lockdown, if we go back into the tiering system, grassroots sports under-18s were allowed. So that gives me massive hope, and it gives the kids massive hope to look forward to something.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you, Rob. But look, good news, we now have with us Cesc Fabregas. Cesc, thanks so much for being with us today. How are you finding playing football during a pandemic? You're in Monaco now.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm in Monaco, and obviously it's not the best of times to be playing football or doing anything in life. But definitely talking from my perspective, my job, our sport, I believe that the most annoying thing is that you feel that you are playing games like a training session. You know, you don't have the fans there to support you. And sometimes it could be a little bit difficult, why not, to tell the truth. But the most important is that at least, you know, we can bring sometimes smiles to people, you know, on their faces when we're watching, when they're watching the game. So, or, you know, if you are a supporter of any club, you can still watch your team. And if they win, obviously, and or lose, you have the emotions that football brings to you and still feel them, which is not everything we wanted, but at least it's something.
Back with the next question shortly, but first we're going to tell you about this.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counsellor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Talent Takes Practice listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/talent. Join over the 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. So Cesc, in Britain, in the UK, we call it grassroots football. It's, you know, our young clubs where we all start. You know, when you grew up in Spain, is that what you call it, grassroots football, or is it a different terminology in Spain for that?
No, I think it's a different terminology. Maybe there is not really a word like you guys use in England, but certainly, you know, it's a little bit like football in the mud, no? Because we played football in these sun pitches that it was so painful, you know, when you go on the floor or the artificial grass. But I don't know, because when I went to England for the first time at 15 years old with the Spanish national team, we were all so impressed because we saw this pitches so amazing, the grass was fantastic, you know, and we were not used to it in Spain at that age. And we were all thinking that in England it's always like that, because we never see sand pictures, pitches. So you tell me if you do have them or not, because we always believe that in England you have always the best pitches to perform and play football at a young age.
Well, that is fascinating, Cesc, because, you know, I would picture Spain as, I would say, grassroots, is the pitches would be immaculate, you know, they would, because of the weather, and it would be great. But that surprised me that the facilities at grassroots level in Spain are different to the UK. Is that possibly then why maybe we see, you know, the foreign players who come to this country are technically better because they probably have rougher facilities growing up?
I don't know. It's difficult to say. To be honest, it has improved from my time as a youngster. Now, a lot of even small clubs, they have artificial pitches, which is not okay. It's not a natural grass, but at least it's better than what we used to have before. Potentially, yeah, it could help a little bit because, you know, the bounce of the ball is completely different. We used to play with these balls that are so hard. And especially, I don't know, in my time, we used to spend a lot of time on the street, playing on the street, a lot. So now I don't see that anymore. I don't know if parents are a bit more concerned or scared to let their kids go alone on the street and play football. Because me now, as a dad, I feel sometimes, should I let them do this or should I let them do that? And my parents before, in a small town where I used to live, grow up, they just, since I'm 8 or 9, I remember going by myself around the town. So it could help before, but I think now times are changing a little bit in that regard.
That is fascinating, Matthew, isn't it? Matthew,
can I just ask a quick question? You know, as I'm not a former professional footballer like Rob, but I've been watching football all my life and I'm fascinated in deconstructing how people become great at what they do. And the thing about you, everyone listening will be thinking that player was a natural. He seemed to be able to see pictures in his own mind to pick out passes. The way he struck the ball was natural, spontaneous. But from your perspective, what did it take for you to begin to develop the skills that we saw when you arrived in the Premier League? What was the journey like for you?
No, the journey was tough. The journey was tough, definitely. We could be talking about sacrifices that I made, or we could talk about the technical ability, tactical. Obviously, going to the Barcelona Academy at 9 years old, I think it helped me a lot, because it's an academy full of fantastic coaches, really well prepared, starting from proper basics, and from there, you know, they make you work hard, they make you understand another type of football that you never learned before. Because when I was playing for my hometown before, it was more or less 4-4-2, and I used to play as a striker and do whatever you want, you know. And yeah, I realized that I scored a lot of goals. I realized that, you know, my friends, which, because they were my friends, they loved playing with me. I kind of felt it at a young age, but you never really realize or expect anything else, you know. You just want them to pass you the ball and just score a goal. But definitely going to La Masia, I think improved my levels at all levels, technically, tactically, and obviously the efforts that you needed to have to achieve to become a professional football player.
So how hard was it then, Cesc? You know, you're at Barcelona, and lots of youngsters now in the UK might relate to this, that they might be at a top football club, Barcelona, one of the biggest clubs in the world, but you took the decision at 16 to leave Barcelona to go to another country, you know, to Arsenal at 16. How hard was that for you? And was it, I think, your mentality, where you leaving one of the biggest football clubs in the world because you thought you might get more of an opportunity at another club?
Listen, Robbie, for me, when I speak about this situation with people, sometimes it's like, oh, it must have been so difficult. But I always say, no, it wasn't. At 16 years old, Arsene Wenger is stopping his holiday to come and talk to you and offer you a contract to play for Arsenal Football Club. At that moment, Arsenal were in an amazing form. They were winning Premier Leagues, they were winning FA Cups, they had top players, obviously a top coach. They had David Dean running the show. And it was, I felt, me and my parents, that it was a club going up, you know, and nobody could stop them the way they were progressing. And that was definitely one of the reasons. I mean, I went there, I saw the training ground, I saw the facilities, I saw the landlady that I could be living with. Everything was so perfect that, it is a sacrifice. Of course, I'm leaving my hometown, I'm leaving my family, all my friends. I cannot do things that 16 years old do. But me going for the first time to London Colney and train with Dennis Bergkamp, Canu, Robert Pires, Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry. For me, this, what can I say? How can I tell someone that this is a sacrifice? This is something magical. This is something that, you know, I was so lucky. And then it was just up to me to take responsibility and to take the chance. Because in life, sometimes you get chances, but if you don't take them, it doesn't really mean anything. So in my mind, it was only focus on the objective to make myself available for Arsene Wenger to see that I was good enough to play there.
Can I just ask on a detail biographically, when you went to the Barcelona Academy, were you still living with your family, or did you actually live at the academy and do your schooling there? And then related to that, when you came to North London, you said you're living with a landlady. You moved in, you weren't staying in a hotel, you were living with a family, something like that?
Yeah, I was living with an Irish woman and Philip Senderos as well, who helped me a lot because he was speaking Spanish, because his parents are from Spain and Argentina, so it was amazing. And Noreen there, the landlady, was fantastic for us. You know, she really, really took us as two sons. And it was really fantastic. And yeah, regarding the academy at Barcelona, the first 5 years, I was going up and down from my hometown to Barcelona. And to be fair, it was a little bit difficult for me, because these are the things that people sometimes don't see, and why I could say that this was a little bit of a sacrifice for me, even though I was enjoying so much. But at 9 years old, when I first signed there, My hometown is like, let's say, an hour away from Barcelona. So when I was finishing school at 5 o'clock, I used to go down and there was a taxi put by the club waiting for me straight away. So I jump in and we were going to pick up five, six different kids on the way going to Barcelona. So I stayed 2 hours in the car. Arrived there at 7:30 was the practice, 9 o'clock finish, we shower, 9:30 we go back. So I was the first one to pick up and the last one to be dropped off. And I arrive home every day around 11:30 at night. So, and then I had to wake up at 7 again to go to school. So it was like 4 times a week plus the day of the game. And these are the little things, you know, because at 9 years old, you don't have a lot of homework. At 10 years old, maybe you can still do it. But when I was 11, 12, 13, 14, it was becoming really, really difficult for me because it's been 6 years the same way and I was tired. I used to take vitamins, you know, I didn't sleep very well. So at 15, my mother and my father, they decided that it was better for me to go to La Masia and sleep there. I, you know, basically go there to school, go there, you know, to live, except Saturdays and Sundays. After the game on Saturday, I could go to my hometown to spend the weekend there. But yeah, it was tough. I mean, at the time you don't realize it because you just love it. You are with playing for Barcelona Academy, going with your friends, but it was a little bit tiring, to be honest. But after that, Arsenal came and it was the best.
You talk about sacrifices there, Cesc, and people, you know, lots of people will understand, you know, sportsmen and women make the sacrifices we made to become successful. How hard was it, you know, making those sacrifices, you know, not being a normal 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 year old, because your mates would have been doing lots of stuff which you couldn't do, but you chose that pathway. And do you ever look back at that time when your mates said, oh, come on, Cesc, let's do this? But you have to be so strong mentally, don't you?
I think that's such a fascinating point that you make, Robbie, because people talk about it as a path. But actually, it's a whole series of decisions that you have to make. You could have decided at any moment, I'm not going to go to that training session. I'm going to pretend I'm not feeling that well. I'm going to go out with my friends. It's not a single sacrifice. It is a series of decisions to make the sacrifice that you need to make in order to get to where you want to get to. And it's a fascinating thing mentally why people decide to make that decision every day when they wake up. What was it like for you? I mean, obviously you're loving being at Barcelona, but what was the thing that was making you say, yes, I'm prepared to keep sacrificing to make it?
I think it's all about the attitude, the determination and the passion that you put into things that you do, that you love. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, I can tell you at that academy, we were probably one of the best teams that the academy has ever had. And this is the truth because we had some top players. But I wasn't even the best player there. I mean, like, there was so many talent, so much talent. But for some reason, they didn't make it. You know, they decided, you know, other things were better or funnier or more fun to do at the time, which is maybe going to start going parties. Yeah. You know, it sounds ridiculous to me, because at that time, if you tell me, let's go to a party, let's go to play football, for me it was only the football and that's it. But for others, I could see that maybe it was not the same intentions. And that's when we talk about, you know, decisions and regretting in the future what you could have done and you didn't.
Cesc, that's so interesting, because you probably don't know, but my background was, I was a sports person, but I was a table tennis player. Okay. Not quite the same size and scale as football, admittedly. But I went through a period, I've got to say, 13 to 14, where I thought, you know what, is it worth it? I do like table tennis, but my friends were doing other things that I want.
Yes, yeah, Cesc, what Matthew doesn't realise, you play table tennis down the pub anyway, don't you?
I won't comment.
I've given a couple of talks to the first team at Arsenal, but I think it must have been after you left.
When, sorry?
It would have been maybe 2000. It must have been 5 or 6, 7 years ago. When did you leave Arsenal?
2011.
It must have been after, because when I went down to London Colney, I played a game with Theo Walcott. There's a table tennis table, isn't there,
downstairs? Yeah.
And then I was giving a talk about the psychology of performance to Arsene and the staff in the first team. But I don't think you were there. Sorry, Robbie. Yeah, there's table tennis tables in the pub.
So, Seth, we have to tell every guest we have on this show that Matthew actually played in the Olympics.
He was actually very good.
Barcelona. I played in Barcelona Olympics 92.
Amazing.
So, Seth, just going back to the point on the sacrifices, and you said you weren't the best player at that academy, and there were better players who didn't make it. In the UK, we say you're better to be sometimes a bronze or a silver medalist, the one that goes like that, not the gold medalist. Listen, in this country, Seth, Wayne Rooney would be a gold medalist. Phil Foden, you know, go straight in there and adapt so well. But would you say you would have been a bronze and a silver medalist progressing?
Yes, I was, to be honest, because you have to understand as well that sometimes we were so superior in that team that sometimes we were winning 32-0, you know, like, so, like players that were always at the top were always the ones making the difference, you know, like after Lionel Messi came and we had some 2-3 players up front that were fantastic. So the players that we, because I was playing deep lying midfielder on in front of, let's say we were playing 3-4-3 and Gerard Piqué was the libero, you know, the basically the last one, the defender, and I was playing just in front of him. And even though we could do things, we had so much possession and we were so dominant that the ball was all the time with the strikers and forwards. So they were the ones always shining. And that's why I'm telling you as well that in life, you need to take opportunities. And I don't know why, for some reason, every time I had that little opportunity to do something or to show something to a coach or to whatever, I delivered in that moment. And this is something that I've always realized. And now if I look back and I will go, I will say, oh, that moment was key. The other one was key. And I was there and I made it happen. You know, so this is the thing that sometimes they bring you to the edge, you know, and they make it go a bit further or not so much.
That's fascinating what you say there, Cesc, about every time you had that opportunity to step up, you stepped up. You kind of like, there's a film, I don't know if you've seen the movie Sliding Doors. It's a movie with Gwyneth Paltrow where she goes to a tube station and just when she's about to go through the train door, the doors close. And one version of her life, she goes through the door and the other, she doesn't. And her life turns out completely.
I've watched
Do you know
it.
The one
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. It's amazing.
And you're talking about these big moments where you stepped up and it propelled you in the right direction. Could you pick out a moment as a young person where you stepped up? And also, if you can add to that, the moment when you were young, when you thought, you know what, there's a bit of doubt in my mind whether I'm going to make it. What was the toughest moment in your youth development?
There was not a tough moment in that regard because I never thought about making it or not making it. Like, even I always say when I first made my debut for Arsenal, I still didn't think I was going to make it. I promise you. I was 16. I was training with the first team for 3 months. I made my debut, and I'm still not thinking of I made it. This was my mentality. I don't know, but it was natural. I didn't think of it. No, don't think like this. I was not protecting myself. This is the way I was. I wanted to enjoy it. Day by day, whatever was happening around me, and that's it. And maybe one key moment, because there are so many, but as a youngster, maybe when I was 15, I was on holiday and I still wasn't sure if I was going to Arsenal or not, and I had my dad has a call from the Spanish Federation saying that I've been selected to go in June to prepare for the World Cup under 17. And that they picked two young players, 1 year younger, to go and just train with the team, to prepare. And, you know, instead of 23 players, it was 25. So they just, you know, I was excited, obviously, but they were just making sure that I know that I will not be selected. It's only to make numbers to help the team prepare. So I said, okay. I went to Madrid, I prepared, we were training, and, you know, I just said, you know what, if I do well, maybe if there is anything, if there is an injury or something, you know, why not? You know, if I deliver, I could potentially be going to Finland to play. So I just trained. I was very, very focused. And in the end, I felt I was doing well. But, you know, they still told you that at the beginning, they already told you that you were not going to be part of the team. No one got injured. Nothing happened. And the day that the list came out, I was doing my luggage to go back to Barcelona. And the coach came up to me and he said, don't pack because you are coming with us. And I was, he said, you impressed us so much. And that, and then we went to Finland. I was very happy. The first game, we were 3-3 against the African team. I forgot who they were. We drew. I didn't play 1 second. The second game, I was on the bench. We were playing against Korea. And we were losing 2-0 at halftime. And the coach said to David Silva and myself, you're coming in the second half straight away. We won 3-2. And I played so well. David Silva scored a hat-trick. We know we had a great connection. We played, assisted each other and things like this. And since then, I became top goal scorer of the tournament and best player of the tournament. And we lost the final against Brazil 1-0. And I think that moment made me realize the confidence that I had in me after that going to Arsenal was like something clicked. Something was different in my mind. And that helped me so, so much to believe more in myself and, you know, to believe that also I was quite ready to compete at any level.
Cesc, you know, in your younger years, did you have anybody ever telling you, Cesc, you know, at those early ages, you're too small, you're not quick enough, you're not good enough on the ball? You know, was there any negatives growing up where it put doubts in your mind? Because we see in this country, loads and loads of kids, you know, parents think they're going to make it, they're going to do this. You know, it's all positive. You know, in Spain, was there any negatives where people said, you know what, Cesc, maybe, you know, you're not big enough, you're not quick enough, you're not this, you're not that. Was there any doubts ever?
I have to say I was very lucky in that regard because I don't know. My teammates always respected me so much. My parents were never the ones that they pushed. They always supported me. Where do you have to play today? Outside of Catalonia? Let's go. I take you. Training today at 12? I take you. So they were very supportive in that regard, but not pressured at all.
Yeah, on that, Cesc, some parents might pressurize their children. So when they get in the car after the game, you know, how did you play? The kids are like looking at their mum and dad to think, oof, you know, I'm a bit nervous. Your parents never were like that with you. Just how did, you know, did you enjoy it? So what were they like?
No, my parents, if they had to tell me something that I did really bad, something that happened that was not me or I did something really bad, then they would come up and tell me. But they would not be telling me, oh, today you didn't play well or things like this. In fact, I would go to my dad basically after every game and it could be myself who would ask him, Daddy, how did I do today? You know, and he would give me his point of view in a nice way. But the other way around, I was lucky that I was never really pressured. Also because I think they also believed that I was very autodestructive myself. I always, for example, we lost a game. I always believe it's my fault. Even today, I think I changed a little bit over the years, but since I'm very little, I always put a lot of pressure on myself. And I think that helped me a lot, you know, to overcome different situations. So I don't think my parents didn't really need to because I was focusing on myself a lot. And I think I was okay doing that. I was lucky.
Do you know, it's interesting. I don't know if you would agree with this, Rob and Cesc, but the way that commentary on football takes place is we often think of the people with huge determination, incredible mental strength, the aggressive people on the pitch, you know, Roy Keane and, you know, Stuart Pearce. But actually, the level of determination and commitment and ambition and mental toughness, it's exactly the same, possibly more, that we see in you, in Dennis Bergkamp, in people who play in a more elegant, understated way. But let me, I don't know if you agree with that, Rob, but let me just ask you quickly, I've got to ask you, what was it like to play alongside Messi when you were growing up at the academy? What was his example like, and how did he shine through?
Well, no, Leo had an amazing tunnel talent, sorry, but he didn't really shine especially at one thing, because he was so small, so small, so skinny. He was dribbling all the time. He didn't like to pass the ball, to be honest, much. And he was always on the floor a lot. The first 2 years, always on the floor. Always the other players, they were putting him very easily on the free kicks and making fouls on him. And after that, he started growing a little bit. He was a little bit more powerful. They put him through the middle a little bit more. He was not so much on the wing. And after that, he started to make the difference, because what I was saying, he was physically not strong yet, but he was very, very intelligent. And he was playing between the lines like an expert. You know, you could find him. He would know when to turn. He would know when to pass you back. He would know how to put the profile of his body, open up the shaping up, and things like this. He was sensational. And I think it helped him a lot to become more central.
We're back with the next question shortly, but first we want to tell you about this.
Investing is one of the best ways to grow wealth over the long term. However, high commissions and clunky products from traditional stockbrokers can sometimes make it complicated for people to start investing. Meanwhile, trillion-dollar companies get built, but very few people benefit from that wealth creation.
The intuitive design makes investing simple for any experience level. Beginners and experts alike, you can start investing from just £2.
They are all about long-term investing with a transparent pricing model and no hidden fees or inflated spreads. When you invest, your capital is at risk. The value of investments can go up as well as down, and you may receive back less than your original investment. Go to freetrade.io/talent, and if you register and fund your account, you'll get a randomly allocated free share worth between £3 and £200, such as Greggs, Rightmove, or Apple.
For more information, visit freetrade.io. So now we see you. So now, you know, you're in Monaco now, and there's loads of successful people, you know, in business who are self-made. You know, they'll be the first one into the office, last one to leave. And it doesn't matter how many millions of pounds they have in the bank, because they've been self-made. And I see that with you, you know, from, as you say, the age of 16, the talent you've had is unbelievable. But now I watch your Instagram, you seem to be first in, last to leave, and you've won everything there is to win. And that's your mentality, isn't it? That as much as you've been successful as you have, you still want to be the first into the training ground and the last to leave.
But Robin, this is the way I believe life should be. I believe you are saying the right things, but I don't think it's anything exceptional. As soon as you do what you love the most, the passion that you have for the game, for what you do, and I'm not talking about football, in general in life, you need to give your all, and you need to do it with a smile on your face and be happy and be grateful about what you do and have. Yes, I love being around the training ground. Even now, I'm the eldest of the team. I mean, imagine I'm playing with a lot of 19, 18, 20s, and I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's completely different to what I've had. Completely different to the other 17 years of my career. But I'm loving it, because I'm adapting to another way of football, another way. I like to see also how they grow up, because things that you used to do, now if you tell them to do it, it's impossible. You know, remember, I always give them the example of I used to wash the boots of Sol Campbell all the time. I used to pick up the balls. I don't know, Robbie, about you. I'm guessing when you were a youngster, you used to do the same. I am telling them, if I ask one of the kids now to wash my boots, I remember washing Leonberg's car one day. I was like, oh my God. But it's okay. I did it with pleasure, you know. But now it's another world. They live in another, and I'm trying to influence them a little bit, telling them little stories for them to realize that this, what they have now, we didn't have before. No. You know, that they should appreciate more and give everything that they have to achieve their dreams.
It's fascinating the way you characterize that, Cesc, because this idea of doing it with full-hearted commitment and doing something with passion, you know, you get out what you put in. And I agree with you. I think you can overdo it a bit, but in our culture today, we're losing a bit of that mentality. But I was going to ask you how you managed to a lot of people listening to this podcast are parents and coaches. How do you transmit that philosophy to young minds? And you've kind of answered it already by telling stories, by getting young people to listen, sharing your own example. Do you think it's the same way with your children? Because I have two, Robbie. Is that the same sort of approach you have? Are they old enough yet to listen to those messages?
Yeah, I believe they are. I mean, I remember always Arsene Wenger saying that the way or the moment to teach most things to a player is between 16 and 19, because it's normally when they are becoming pros and they have that mentality that everything you tell them is new for them and they are excited to do it, so they like to learn. But now, to be honest, it changed a little bit, even though now, you know, before, I agree with Arsene that what he used to say is good, but now times have changed a little bit, and you see some players sometimes going out, oh, today training, oh, what we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. I look at them, it's like, man, you have potentially 15 years ahead of you to have the fantastic career, and you are at 18 complaining about a training session. I mean, that's not on, you know, it's not how it should be. And I think sometimes you need to repeat it, as you know, for these new generations, they have things a little bit easier than we used to have. They have so much information. I was talking to my friend the other day. Okay. If I knew the things that I know now, at 20, I would have a chef, I would have a personal fitness coach. I would have a nutritionist. I would have so many other things to make this 2, 3, 4, 5% extra that before I didn't know. And this is an investment. Yeah, it would have cost money, but it's an investment for your career. You're not doing it because it's a pleasure or something. No, you're doing it because it's so, so important. And especially the way football is going now, which is so physical. You have to be running up and down for 90, 95 minutes every 3 days. I mean, coaches now, if you are better prepared than someone who has more talent than you, you will play, because this is how coaches look at it now. And the GPS and all of these things that before we didn't used to have. So definitely it's about what we were saying before, moments, taking opportunities and always giving your best.
This is fantastic. This is so interesting, Rob. I've got to let me just ask you a quick question, Cesc. With all of our guests, we ask three set questions.
Okay.
So if it's okay at this point, let me throw in number one. What was the weakest part of your skill set and the one that you had to work hardest on to improve?
My skill set also consists in physical abilities and things like this.
Yeah.
Because, I think physically, I've never been top. I've never been quick. I mean, I had between 20 and 25, I gained a little bit of speed and I had a bit of power. But throughout my career, it's something that I really had to work on a lot, because, you know, I was never fast. The Premier League, Robbie, how it is. I mean, it's no. I always say the Premier League kills you. You know, I played in Spain for 3 years and it's a fantastic league full of talent and technical ability, but you cannot compare nothing to the Premier League. And you need to be ready every 3 days, you know, to compete and to fight against the best teams in the country. And for that reason, you know, you need to be very well prepared. And I always believed that because I was not physically at the same level as my opponents or as my teammates, that I had to give always that little extra, you know, and in training and improving in things that I was not at my best. But definitely, I think my physical abilities has been the thing that maybe have let me down a little bit more in my career.
Matthew, on that, I had to be prepared to play against Cesc because my mentality was that every time Cesc touched the ball, try and smash him as hard as I could.
I don't remember that.
and Cesc, look, one of the best clips, I was speaking to Matthew before you come on, and I said, 5-2 at the Emirates, and you nutmegged me in the corner. And it's, and
oh my God, I remember that.
I was
that.
Like, oh no.
But you see, in that moment, I felt strong in those years. In those years, maybe those are the years that I felt really I could do anything that the Premier League demanded.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I could compete against anyone. But I'm talking about maybe a little bit later, where, you know, because I started so young and you played so many games, Champions League, with the national team, we were always getting to finals and stuff. So we didn't have... I basically for 14 years had 2-3 weeks holiday each summer, and wow. in the Premier League you have no break in the winter. In the other leagues they have winter breaks. So yeah, I had to really work on a different level. Yeah.
When you came up against a player like Rob, who's trying to smash you every time you get the ball, I mean, how do you deal with that challenge?
No, I mean, it all depends. It all depends. You need to be, because, for example, when I was playing against Robin, I know exactly the type of player he is and what he's trying to do. But sometimes even like this is difficult. The same way that he will know how I play, and for him it will be difficult. But yeah. I'm saying that when we were playing, for example, away against you guys.
Yeah, Blackburn.
It was tough. Yeah, it was very tough. It was very tough because a small pitch. The pitch was not great, in great conditions. They were very, very physical. So what, in that case, what if I go one-on-one against Robbie, the full pitch, he'll beat me because it's normal. But when I had to take advantage of when I have the ball to try to be as quick as possible and as sharp as possible to get through him, you know how? Yeah. Because normally I'm not a good dribbler. I've never been. But I was trying always to prepare my next move. For example, I knew that Robbie was coming really fast, aggressive to me, trying to... Yeah. So I would always prepare a 1-2, you know? Yeah. Like, I already know what's behind me. So with one touch, I would play the ball and accelerate behind him to play the 1-2. And that's how I used to dribble. And for me, not being quick helped me as well to develop my mind a little bit quicker and to... You know, try to always compensate in that way. But yeah, it wasn't easy for sure.
See, that's fascinating, Matthew, because Cesc was always prepared for every game. So, you know, this is what I don't think enough people do now, is prepare against the opposition player. Like Cesc, you can see the career he's had. But he knew he was playing me, so he knew to get around me, it'd be a 1-2. He might be playing against another player the next week, which he would have been. He prepares in a different way. I think it's a great mentality to have. Mm-hmm. You know, Cesc, the question I'm intrigued to know is, so at 16, as we've said, you come over to the UK, you know, different culture, different way of playing football. We see more, you know, youngsters now coming over from, you know, Europe to play in the Premier League and academies. We don't see many youngsters from the UK going over to academies abroad. You know, why do you think that is? Is it you adapted ever so well? We see a few, you know, kids going over now to Germany. You know, we've seen Jude Bellingham, we've seen Sancho, we've seen, you know, a few going over, but not as many go from the UK to Europe, do they, in the academy system? Why do you think that is, or can you answer it?
I think the facilities you have in England, you find them nowhere. In general, I'm not talking about the top clubs. Okay, you have top clubs in Spain, you have two top clubs in Germany. But in general, even in championship clubs, the facilities you have in England, you don't find them anywhere. Wow. Secondly, I also believe that the Premier League is the best league in the world. It has the power of football right now. The money is in the Premier League. And I believe that everyone is ready to prepare themselves to play in England.
Yeah.
You know, they don't see more than that because you are in the best place to have the best career. But I agree with you that, for example, as you mentioned, Sancho He's doing fantastically well in Germany, and now he's growing, and now he's ready to go anywhere he wants.
Yeah.
So I agree with you that sometimes there could be moves that are more interesting than staying in the UK, for example. But it must not be difficult, and it's all also about. I think I was one of the first ones to move to England in Spain. After that, it's been a lot coming, but. In 2003, when I first joined Arsenal, it was like, I remember in Spain, it was like, what is he doing? Why is he going to England? Like, nobody is doing that. I think I was the first one. And then it started growing. And maybe in 5-10 years, whatever, we can see the same in UK. It goes for phases, I think.
Can I just ask a quick question on Arsenal and Wenger in particular? Observed the team and his management philosophy, got to know him reasonably well personally. I don't know if you would agree with this critique. I mean, when he arrived in England, incredible innovator, the way Arsenal played, one of the first coaches in the Premier League to focus on diet and these other activities that are so important for performance. But do you think it's fair to say when he got into his later career, he stopped innovating? Football was beginning to change the way that clubs set up tactically. And Wenger, if I could put it this way, got a tiny bit complacent, and Arsenal, as a consequence, started to stagnate. Do you think that's a valid critique, or do you think that's a little unfair?
Depends how you want to see it. I believe that Arsene was very passionate about the free-flowing football. He loved... Look at all the players that he signed, always with an intention. Always this type of players that they love to come between the lines. All midfielders that are not really wingers, that they like to come, they like to play 1-2s. I mean, I can mention you Robert Pires, Rosikis, Alex Lepes, Santis Cazorlas. I mean, all of these players, Ozil, they are not all the same, but they understand football the same way. And I think I had the feeling sometimes that with Arsene, if we had a fantastic game, playing the football that he likes, it was more pleasure for him than winning, I don't know, a cup.
You
could see the smile on his face, and he will tell you, wow, it's like top. And he will tell you, look, remember what you did there. And he was his training was always focusing, I will not say the beautiful football, but the you understand what I mean, the tiki-taka that it's called nowadays. And when I was... Because I saw the two faces of Arsene and the two kind of philosophies or teams that he had. Because I came in when the Invincibles happened that year. And it was a simple 4-4-2 with Patrick and Gilberto Silva in midfield, that they were controlling everything. Pires coming inside, creating with Dennis Bergkamp behind Thierry Henry. Thierry making the runs and Ljungberg as well. Making the runs behind defenders to stretch teams. Then you had one right back that was very, very good, but more defensive like Loren. And then you had one fantastic, like Ashley Cole, that gives you the width because Robert Pires is coming inside. So, and then after that, when all these players left, all these warriors, all these champions, it became a little bit more this football that we are talking about now, that we were discussing, more of a small players, but technically very, very talented. And I think he wanted to win like this. You could see it. I mean, should we have won something? Yes, I believe we had many opportunities to do for one thing or another. We were too young maybe as well. We were not maybe ready to play or to win against the Chelseas of Mourinho or the Ferguson's Man United. But we were competing even at a very young age. And I think his pleasure and his regret was not winning the league with this team. And it's the same for me.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Question two. What is the one thing that you haven't got any talent in, but you wish you had?
Anything.
Yeah, it could be football or it could be unrelated to football.
Oh man, there's so many things. I mean, to be honest, cooking.
Yeah.
Cooking. I you don't want me in the kitchen. Basically, like, I would love to have... I know that you could say potentially, you know, you can learn, it's easy to learn and stuff, but really, I'm so bad. anything happens when I'm in the kitchen, so I just don't touch it, just in case.
Cesc, can I ask you, a bit earlier you were talking about how if you knew when you were younger what you know now, you'd be able to introduce a focus on these other things that can make a difference, the extra 2-3%. And you mentioned diet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you, Rob, you were thinking this. What's your attitude to diet now? What should young people trying to fulfill their potential as footballers, how should they be eating and drinking?
That's one question that even now for me is difficult to answer, because I've tried so many different things and some have worked better, some others, but you don't really know why. Like, I remember, I will give you a few examples. Like on the Euro 2012, I decided that I wanted to not lose weight, because I've always been skinny, but I wanted to kind of be thinner, and so this thing I could be quicker. That was my aim. So I started eating a little bit less, and I was 72 kilos on the Euro 2012, and wow. I was flying. Don't ask me why. I felt so good. My weight was 74. I went to 72 each day. I was weighing myself, and I was flying. Then what happened? For some reason, then you just stop doing certain things. You go back to 74. You may do well for a few games, but then you think, oh no, I was better there, and you confuse yourself. Then, for example, the second year of my second year at Chelsea, I tried something different, which was from pre-season. I started eating only salads, only soups and stuff like that, because me also, I thought that maybe after the summer I ate a little bit too much, whatever, so I wanted to be in shape quick. And what happened? That I didn't have power. I didn't have no power whatsoever. And I was thinking, why? I'm eating so well, I'm eating these salads, these vegetables like this. What happened? That I was not having any carbohydrates, I was not having protein. But this is because I was lost. I didn't know. And I was already 28 at the time, you know? And then after that, when healing came, I started eating anything I wanted, just to try, because I wanted to see the difference, what happened when I eat so well, or when I eat, not rubbish, but things that I maybe sometimes even wasn't supposed to be eating, and I was so good. I felt [S2] Wow. [S1] so good. So for me, sometimes to find this balance is so difficult. I need someone next to me every day explaining me what and why I need to eat that. So for even today, I'm so bad at nutrition, and I wish I had someone next to me constantly.
I had something to say about that, Cesc, because I wrote a book called Rebel Ideas, where there's a chapter on diet. one of the things, I think, mildly serious point, but I think one of the big errors is to think there is a standardized diet that everyone can eat and it can benefit them. This, I think, is deeply mistaken, because each individual has a slightly different genetic makeup, correct, a slightly different metabolism, a slightly different gut microbiome, and therefore how we respond to different foods is fundamentally individualistic. Even the blood sugar response is different. So my recommendation to nutritionists, sports scientists and coaches is to try and tailor a diet. And the fact that you tried different things to find what works for you, it can be quite a long-term process. There are more rigorous ways of doing this now, but it doesn't surprise me that it took a while for you to find your way, because it can be confusing. Go on, sorry, Rob.
All the way through your life from 9, you know, the pathways chosen, you know, getting in taxis, even till talking when you were 28, the marginal gains, you talk about diets, the marginal gains you would do to make sure you are peak performance from the age of 9 to now. It's quite remarkable, really, to think that all the way through your life, you know, sports people give up stuff, even going home thinking, how can I do this? And you've won everything it is to win. But even now, the marginal gains is quite incredible.
It is.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. But honestly, I've been blown away. I think the way you have articulated the way you've maximized your own talent and potential, it's been completely compelling, Cesc.
It's all about believing and working hard. There's no other way. Sleep the right hours, make sacrifices, because we all need to make sacrifices. But I think the biggest thing of all is consistency. How are you at the top level playing for 18 years, especially in the Premier League, and playing for top clubs like Arsenal, Barcelona, Chelsea, and 13 years in the probably the most successful national team in history, maybe?
The best.
On that, Cesc, as well, mentality. Because in mentality, that World Cup, sure. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, were you sub on four games and even come on in the final? Listen, what an incredible side. But were you a sulker? Were you, one who was I'm not playing, I'm sulking. Did you have an influence in that dressing room where if you did sulk, it would reflect on everybody else? Everybody would know you were sulking. Or did you just get on with it because you had a strong mentality?
Never. For me, I broke my leg against Barcelona when I shot a penalty. And I made that World Cup just... Del Bosque was calling me to Madrid 2-3 times every 1-2 months. And the end, I made it. And from there, I knew it would be a difficult World Cup because physically I was not in shape, but I worked during the pre-season of the World Cup, World Cup and at the camp, and I made it. And as you said, I came on in four occasions, and in four big occasions, I would say, because they were four very big moments. And I was lucky to, to put my print there, but definitely I never... Okay, never say never, because we all have bad moments, bad days, but I believe in positivity, and yes, we all want to play, we all want to win, but if I complain and I don't work hard, what's the point? First work hard, first show that you deserve to play, first show that you are committed, after complain. After go to the coach and tell him, coach, I'm better than the other one. I'm training so well. The other one is not playing well. Then you can ask for explanations. But if you are not the first one who is doing it, then you have no right to ask or demand anything.
I've got to just say...
Fantastic, that.
I think it's brilliant. Absolutely spot on. And I think I think I can say this with complete sincerity. I've written it many times in the Times. I think Spain that you played in was the outstanding national team in the history of football. And I think I'm right in saying one of the occasions you came on was a final and you set up Iniesta for the winning goal.
Correct.
Yeah. What's your recollection of that moment?
Well, no, I remember very well. I, to be honest, it was a funny one because before the game, 2 days before the semi-final against Germany, we were playing 5-5 with the players that we didn't start the game on the quarterfinal, and Fernando Torres made one shot and I went to block it and it hit me right on the healing where I had my broken leg, and I started to feel this pain. I thought I broke it again, so I went to do some scan. Everything was good, but I was limping, so I couldn't make the semi-final. And the team played very well in the semi-final, to be honest, and me, when we are in the second half struggling against Holland, there was always the fitness coach who will go to the bench, he will go walk through the bench and he will make you. So three players to warm up. So everyone is like, is it me? The guy wouldn't say names. He would just go like this. So, me, I'm like, is he going to pick me? Is he not? Because whatever. And when he said me, oh my God, I said, this is my game. I'm going to change the game. I promise you, this is how I thought, and this is what happened, and it was one of the proudest moments of my career, to be honest. Yeah, because the game, I watched it recently in the confinement again, because they showed it in the Spanish TV, and it made me even more prouder, because I didn't remember that I played so that well that game. It was good memory.
So just my last question. There's so many youngsters now in the academy system. So many at one point will get told, you're not quite good enough at this moment. What advice would you give to the thousands of youngsters that the dream isn't over? What would you say to them? Because we know, Cesc, how hard it is to be successful in our chosen field, being a footballer. 99% of kids won't make it. the ones who get released, who've still got that dream, what would you say to them?
Hey, as you mentioned it, it's not over. That one club tells you you're not good enough doesn't mean anything. So what? They tell you you're not good enough. I mean, there is thousands of clubs around the world that will take you. And it's just about having the right attitude, wanting to learn and wanting to deliver. I mean, yeah, and even then, maybe you don't make it or it still doesn't happen. But for me, the most important is that you give your all, you give everything, and that you can sell it to yourself. I tried. I've done everything I could. I'm not good enough, or it just didn't happen for me. And this happens in other aspects of life. Will happen to me, or it happened to me, to you, to anyone. That's why you need to, first of all, be proud of yourself that you tried your best. Secondly, also, you why not give them some? Look at the story of N'Golo Kanté. Look at the story of Harry Kane that was sitting on the bench with Jamie Vardy at Leicester. And they are two of the best strikers in the country. I mean, there's so many little stories that it's not over until it's over. You know, you have to keep trying. And okay, Barcelona doesn't want you. So what? This is not the end of the world. Try somewhere else. And if not, try somewhere else. And this is the mentality.
Right. It's fantastic advice. And the last question of my set three questions is, what is the best piece of advice anybody has ever given you, and what was it?
That's a good one. I mean, I've had so many good advices. It could probably be Arsene Wenger. I mean, not forgetting my dad and my parents, everything they taught me and they made me learn. But Arsene Wenger, one day that I had a bit of a rough time at the very beginning, and he told me, listen, with this attitude that you have with me, you will always have a chance. The day that you stop, because I was crying, I was a little bit, you know, things that were not going well for me, and he took me on the side and he said, listen, you have the right attitude. You are a good kid. You are trying your best. You are a good, good football player. You just need to keep going. And he gave me the example of Thierry Henry when he first came to England. That the same thing. It was not happening for him. I think, I don't know. I wasn't there yet, but apparently the fans were not very happy with him, or the newspapers and stuff like that. And he gave me that example to say, listen, with mentality and with good attitude, which you have, you will end up making this because you are a good football player and I like you very much. So that gave me, sometimes you just need words for you to, kind words for you to accept it and just work with. Because I think I was putting too much pressure on myself as well. You know, it's not happening. So for someone like him to come to you, give the right words on your ear, and you feel this release on your brain, on your body, and then you just start playing your football naturally. And so many from Arsene, to be honest. Arsene was a genius in this, and I will always be thankful to him for what he's taught me.
When you do retire, whenever that may be, you know, coaching is a possibility, obviously, and we don't know what you can tell us. But as a midfield player, all the young midfield players listen to this. You know, we've seen how it's changed, Seth, where 4-4-2, box-to-box player, or one who sits in front of the back four. Now we've got number sixes, we've got number eights, we've got number tens. If you're talking about a young midfield player, you know, attributes, receiving on the back foot, looking to play forward, trying to get in between the lines. You know, what would you say to young midfield players is so important, looking over your shoulders? You know, because you're one of the best midfielders the Premier League's ever seen.
Yes, thank you. not at all, but thank you.
You mentioned them all.
I mean, you know how it is to play in midfield, Robbie. Nowadays, for what I see, a lot of coaches now, what they want is to attack through the sides, through the wings, because everyone packs the middle. Okay? Most of the coaches, especially coaches who are coaching players with not a lot of talent, they say, we attack through the wings, nothing here, because you lose the ball and you have a counterattack, whatever. And that's why we need to analyze well this situation, because when I hear things like this, I hate it. because I'm a midfielder, you're a midfielder, and I want things to go through the middle because I want to touch the ball as many times as I can. And for me, a coach, for him to tell me that we attack through there because the middle, we can lose the ball, I don't accept it as a midfielder. And that's why, you know, I put even more emphasis in learning and coaching this type of moments, like you said, looking on your shoulders. There is so many exercises that you can do this even by yourself, playing 1-2s, receiving on the right shape of your body, and as you mentioned it, looking forward. I hate when I see a player that is completely alone. The center back gives him a ball, he's alone, and he gives it back to the center back. These things, for me, you need to teach, because sometimes it's possible that they don't see it. They don't see it. And that's why you need to be coaching. And because sometimes playing forward is the only way to attack, because if not, you don't attack if you don't play forward. And secondly, you can create. Yesterday, I was watching Atletico Bilbao, Barcelona. And what Bilbao did so well, like Robbie did this very well, to be honest. Like in a tackle, you are making a tackle, but with your first touch, you are making an intent to make a pass forward. But it's not a tackle just to make a tackle. No, it's a tackle with an intent that you are creating a counterattack for your team to score in the best possibilities. And sometimes these are the things that you need to be coaching, repeating. And that's why coaches nowadays, they do a lot of these formations, 11 against 0, and they repeat. Before, it was never used to happen, but nowadays, a lot.
Fantastic. So it's coaching. You want to
absolutely
go last? Coaching. So it's coaching. So would you want to be a coach then, Cesc, when eventually the time comes when you retire?
I'd love to be a coach, to be honest. I've already taken. I'm taking my badges now. It's a bit difficult because of COVID, because certain things have been stopped and I cannot kind of progress for now. But it's something that every day more. It intrigues me. It gives me flying, you know, things in my stomach.
Yeah,
butterflies. And also, I mean, this young team, you know, that they ask a lot of questions. They are willing to learn. You can talk to them, and it's actually one thing that I'm really looking forward to. But not yet. Let's just wait a couple of more years.
Fantastic.
Well, I don't know
fantastic.
About you, Rob. Brilliant. Yeah, totally agree. You will make a brilliant coach. Yeah. You speak so eloquently and intelligently, you know, not just about sport, but about life. Yeah. So for me, it's been a complete joy to speak to you, Rob. Yeah. Lovely to see
well
you
done,
too.
Well done, Cesc. Thanks
and
so
thank
much.
You for listening.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Rob. Thank you.
Yeah,
it was
brilliant.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Remember to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Spread the word. We'll be back next week. But for now, from all of us, goodbye.